any direction. "You can have Cohen's chamber then," she suggested. "We'll let him out."
"We won't," Dylan interjected. "Don't trust the kid.
He's not presenting symptoms."
"But Sullivan is," the captain said. "Just like Toby had."
Sullivan backed toward the chamber, and Nova reached for him anyway.
"Stop it," he said. "Damn it, Nova. If you care about me at all, you will not risk getting yourself sick. You hear me? You do everything in your power to get off this rock and never look back."
She nodded, tasting salt. She was crying. Sullivan's head twitched against his own will. Blood spattered the floor.
"Carlo,"
he gasped out.
"Please."
Everyone hesitated.
"You heard the man,"
Cohen snapped from his chamber.
Nova could throttle him for his lack of sympathy, for his callous tone.
"Do it," Dylan ordered.
The doctor purged isolation one and opened the door. Toby didn't budge as Sullivan walked inside. Nova jogged after him. He turned to face her, the blood flowing freely from his nose.
"Tell Miko and the boys I love them,"
he said. The door slid closed. Another tremor rocked his body. Sullivan dropped to his knees, coughing, cradling his face in his hands. His body shook. The fan kicked on, the sedative again filling the chamber, and Sullivan slumped to his side. Tears streaming down her face, Nova Singh watched as the tremors slowed and her cousin's eyes fell lazily shut. Pulling her gaze from the laser Toby had used to attack Sullivan, Thea inspected her own suit. Everything was intact. Of course it was. She knew all too well the alerts she'd have experienced with a suit breach. Had Sullivan seen the same thing? "My alerts are going wild." She wondered briefly if he'd tried to hide it from them. The answer didn't matter. Not anymore.
"We need to get off this planet," Dylan announced.
"And leave them?"
Dr. Tarlow asked, nodding at the two unconscious men.
"They're screwed. The Black Quarry vids showed it, and the kids confirmed the same thing. We need to evac immediately."
"Dylan's right," Thea said, shocked she was even having to argue this point. Of all people, Dr. Tarlow should know how dangerous this situation was, how they needed to start quarantine procedures and stick to them, how this could get away from them in seconds and infect the entire crew if they weren't careful.
"The kid said it spread before they could do anything," Dr. Tarlow responded. "For all we know, it's a simple infection. We can keep Toby and Sullivan in quarantine, but at least let me take some blood samples and run a few tests, see if anything looks familiar."
Nova turned away from the isolation chamber, hope shining in her eyes.
"You think you can cure them?"
"I can't promise anything, but I'd like to try. I have a hypothesis, and that's a start."
"I'll stay and help,"
Nova offered.
"You will not," Dylan said. "You're our only pilot, and I'll be damned if I let you within a meter of anyone experiencing symptoms."
"Screw you, Dylan."
The captain stared.
"This is your fault," Nova went on. "You had us come barging in, go digging in the dark without updating Hevitz, and now look at Sullivan, at Toby. I wanted to trust you, tried to believe you'd pull through, but..."
"If I'm recalling correctly, you all barged ahead," Dylan spat.
"I gave orders for us to stay out of the med bay."
"We only ended up in this situation because you insisted on going to the drilling base to begin with. You've got your head so far up the company's ass that you can't see warning signs that have been flashing since we left Northwood."
Dylan exhaled evenly.
"What is this, Nova? Sullivan gets sick and you jump on his soapbox? Is that how this works?"
"He's been right all along. We all have. We never should have left Odyssey.
And right now, instead of saying I told you so, we need to get back to it."
The captain angled to Dr. Tarlow.
"And no, you can't stay and run tests. You heard what the kid said. Those dead bodies in the chasm might not be all that dead, and I don't want to deal with Ackley's zombies.
Zombies are fictitious, the doctor said curtly.
What about Cohen? Thea asked.
He stays, like the other two.
The whole reason we came here was for survivors. He's a survivor. A potentially infected one.
Again, Cohen called from his chamber. Do I look like I have bloody eyes and a massive nosebleed? We can't confirm what he's been up to the past 2 months, Dylan continued. So, if we're enacting quarantine procedures, we can't in good faith bring him on Odyssey.
We have an isolation chamber on Odyssey, Thea went on. If you're gonna leave Toby and Sullivan behind, you could at least take the person we were sent here to help.
I've had about enough of interns and temps arguing with my orders.
Dylan made a circular motion with her stun gun, then pointed it at the hall.
Let's go.
I'm staying, Dr. Tarlow announced. I refuse to abandon these men, not if there's something that can be done for them.
Then you're forcing me to abandon you, Dylan said.
Leave me a radio. That storm was rough. If you find Odyssey in flying condition, I'll come join you immediately. Leave these men to rot, no questions asked. But if you need repairs, well, I'll see to our men while you see to our ship.
Dylan considered this a moment, then tossed a radio at Dr. Tarlow, who barely managed to catch it. It shook in her grasp, and she set it on a nearby counter, extending her trembling fingers.
I'm not leaving you a security detail, the captain said. Not when you're taking a risk I advised against, and we might only get one shot to get out of here.
Fair enough, the doctor said. Then she turned to Thea. I'll need your help if I want to make good time.
Thea wanted to scream. How could the doctor ask this of her? For once, Dylan Lowe was making sense. The crew needed to get off Ackley's. They never should have landed.
Thea glanced at the men. It could have been her in that chamber. Cleaver hadn't fit in the harness at the drilling site, and he'd looked to her, but Toby had volunteered. Toby, who was an ass, always heckling her, always condescending toward everyone, but now unconscious on the other side of that glass. And Sullivan, too. She'd figured him to be a coward earlier, convinced herself that Sullivan thought his life and his family were more important than the rest of the crew's, and yet he'd been the first to jump to action. If there was a way to stabilize these two men, to undo everything that had happened in the last few hours, well, Thea owed it to them to at least try. And she owed Cohen also. She would most certainly be dead if it hadn't been for his help at the Witch Hazel bunker. Thea, please, Dr. Tarlow insisted.
The woman was smart enough to know a lost cause, Thea reasoned. If there was hope of a cure, they could potentially all get off this planet, Cohen included. There'd be no reason to leave anyone behind. She glanced at his chamber. He was leaning into the glass door, shoulders slumped in defeat. When he saw her watching, he simply raised his brows, as if to say, "Your call." Had he known Dylan would rightly be so uptight about security, even after he confirmed that the contagion originated in water and was passed by blood? Was that why he'd covered for Thea? Said he'd helped her enter the Witch Hazel bunker, not revived her? Thea turned away, not quite caring what his answer was. She owed him, and it would be so very easy to release Cohen from his chamber once Dylan was out of sight.
I'll stay, she announced.
The reactions were varied. Dylan grumbled about interns being stupid. Cohen looked surprised. Nova, grateful. Cleaver, who was already sweeping the hall, shouted back,
Great! The intern wants to be a hero. Good for her. Now let's get back to Odyssey while we still can.
I'll leave you one of the rovers, Dylan said, and led Nova and Cleaver out without another word.
The medbay doors sealed with a hydraulic click. Thea thought the vacant hallway seemed more ominous now that the others were gone.
Lights pulsed and flickered before plunging into darkness for a solid 3 seconds, then winking on again. Someone could run up the hall in that stretch of poor visibility and reach the medbay without Thea or Dr. Tarlow even seeing them coming. The tattooed man from the chasm flashed before Thea's eyes, his purple-blue skin, his blood-soaked coveralls. It sounded impossible. Infected, hibernating victims capable of reanimating under the right conditions. Either Cohen's hypothesis was wrong, or the impossible was possible on Ocleus. Dr. Tarlow called for Thea, and she stepped away from the door.
"What are you doing?"
Cohen asked as she passed the isolation chamber. His intercom was still on, and his words resounded clearly on her side of the glass. "Saving your ass," she said, throwing his own words back at him. "You're welcome."
"You can't save anyone if you're dead. You should have gone back to your ship."
"I don't think you're following. Dylan isn't going to let anyone on Odyssey if she suspects they might be sick. So if you want to get off this planet, Dr. Tarlow and I need to find a cure. Even then, Dylan will have her suspicions, and you'll end up in an isolation chamber on Odyssey for the whole flight home."
"I don't trust her," Cohen said, dropping his voice to a whisper.
"Yeah, it's pretty hard to trust a captain who's rude, underqualified, and prone to recklessness. I told you she'd give you trouble."
"Not Dylan Lowe," Cohen clarified. "Your doctor."
"What?" Thea looked over her shoulder. Dr. Tarlow was gathering equipment while one of the medical computers booted up.
"Why not?" "I've got my reasons."
"Back at the bunker, you wanted to see her."
"So I could talk to her, not sit in isolation."
"Dr. Tarlow?" Thea called. "Can I let Cohen out? He wants to talk to you, and the testing will be faster with a second set of hands anyway." Without so much as looking their way, the woman shook her head. "He's been on this rock 2 months," Thea continued, "and doesn't have any of the signs the others exhibited. I don't think he's a risk to us." Dr. Tarlow paused, head cocked in thought. Then she swiveled in her chair to face them.
"You're an official Hevitz employee, are you not?" she asked Cohen.
He nodded. She considered this a moment before pivoting toward Thea.
"Then we can't risk it."
"But we can risk me?" she erupted. "I'm expendable?"
"Of course not, Thea. But you and I, we have a rapport. We've worked out a system. I trust you in a situation like this. I don't trust him."
"Funny, I don't trust you either,"
said Cohen, but there was no anger to his expression, no edge to his voice. It was said plainly, and Thea thought he almost looked scared. Dr. Tarlow stood, smoothing the front of her suit, as if it were even possible for the material to hold a wrinkle.
"This conversation is a waste of precious time. Come on, Thea."
She picked up a medical case and walked toward Isolation 1.
"Ask her about her parents," Cohen said
as Thea moved to join her. Thea frowned. "They died during Witch Hazel, in a storm. Everyone knows that."
"Ask her for the details."
Thea stared at him a moment. Pitch Evans said not to trust Cohen. Cohen said not to trust the doctor. Which was it then? Trust no one?
"Thea?"
Dr. Tarlow called. She left Cohen standing there, palms pressed helplessly to the chamber's glass door.
"I fucked it all up,"
Dylan muttered. Nova stared, certain she'd heard her boss wrong. They'd made it to the hangar without incident and were now in Rover 1, driving back into the Ocleus night. Cleaver was in the back seat, head reclined and eyes closed. The drive to Odyssey wasn't longer than 15 minutes, but he was clearly trying for a catnap. Nova wished she could join him. Anything to not think about what had just happened in that medbay, the fate that awaited Sullivan.
"You were right," Dylan said. "This is my fault. All of it. Toby and Sullivan and..."
The captain let out a long exhale. I was set on making sure I could impress my dad, and, by extension, Hevitz. Except he's dead. We all saw that footage. He's gone, and so is Black Quarry, and now some of my crew is damned, too. I shouldn't have let Tarlo and the interns stay behind. If something happens to them, that's on me also. Nova peered at Dylan, confused. The captain refused to admit when she was wrong. She hated looking weak. This confession was the most vulnerable thing Nova had ever heard her say.
God, I'm so sorry about Sullivan.
Dylan glanced Nova's way, a heavy line creased in the captain's brow. Was this an honest apology, or simply what Dylan thought she was expected to say? Nova didn't know anymore.
Fuck!
Dylan said. She smacked the steering wheel once, twice, swore again. Because Nova didn't know what else to do, she said,
It's okay, Dill.
How is it okay?
It wasn't. Not really. Back at Northwood Point, Nova had begged Dylan to add Sullivan to the crew. His predicament was partially her fault, but it weighed most heavily on Dylan. If the captain had been honest about where they were headed, about what might be at stake, Nova never would have dragged her cousin into this mess. And if Dylan had seen that SOS, hell, even if she hadn't, Dylan was still responsible for pushing the team on and putting them at risk. Nova blamed Dylan low. She wanted to scream this at her, make the woman feel the guilt, have the regret burrow deep into her bones. But when Nova was honest with herself, when she looked past her anger and to the next few hours ahead, getting off Achlis only seemed feasible if she put that bitterness behind her. Maybe Tarlo would find something out back at the med bay, and Nova's animosity toward Dylan wasn't even necessary. She had to stay level-headed, optimistic, hopeful. They had to work together.
I don't know, Nova said to Dylan finally, but we'll get through it.
There's no good outcome.
There's no perfect outcome,
Nova countered.
It's fucked, the whole mission. It's impossible.
Impossible is just an excuse not to try, Nova said. You break it down into little steps, and then it becomes a bunch of things you can tackle. Possible things. So, let's get to Odyssey, and then call Hevitz, and then go from there. One possibility at a time.
Where the fuck did you hear that? Dylan said. It's so practical, I want to puke.
My father.
What is he? A life coach? A shrink?
He's dead.
Oh. She said. Sorry.
Then a moment later.
How?
Trying to do the impossible?
You mean the possible,
Dylan corrected.
Something like that.
Nova glanced out her window, the rugged expanse of Achlis racing by. The truth was that she'd never forgiven her father for picking the Union over his family, for flying wherever someone ordered him to. He'd been blown into stardust during the Casey uprising when Nova was 15. Her mother blamed the colonist who shot him. Nova blamed the Union for putting him in danger to begin with. He'd received the Hero's Medal after his death, the Union's highest honor for their soldiers. By moving into the line of fire, he'd saved the rest of his unit. But a medal couldn't replace her father, and every time she saw it sitting on their mantle, her anger festered and grew. As soon as she turned 16 and became eligible for the military, she dropped out of school to follow in his footsteps. Nova wanted unity. Peace. She wanted to go back in time and tell those bastards on Casey to stop fighting what was good for them. She wanted the trios to start seeing straight before they ended up exactly like Casey, a war erupting beyond their atmosphere, their system's future suddenly uncertain, their skies bloody. And that blood wouldn't fade. It would be a constant. The trios was too valuable, its resources too precious, and the Union would never let them go. The skirmish wouldn't end in independence after a mere 4 months of fighting, like it had for Casey's citizens. Above all else, Nova just wanted to be with her father again. He was out there, in space, pieces of him sprinkled across the cosmos. When she was flying, she was home. Maybe she had a bit of a death wish, but if she ended up scattered across the void like him, would that really be such a bad thing? Of course, the Union had gone and robbed her of even that possibility, blacklisting her from combat when her peripheral vision faltered. These days, she hated them almost as much as she hated the Radicals.
All right, Dylan said, one possibility at a time, until the impossible's accomplished.
She forced a smile. It wasn't large, and it was aimed at the windshield, not Nova, but it counted. And it put the day's tally at 2.5, which was really saying something, given their circumstances.
Let's start with blood work, Dr. Tarlow said, handing Thea a rack of vials and 2 syringes and grabbing an electric shock rod that had been lying forgotten beneath one of the regenerative beds. I'm not purging the chamber. When we open the door, the rest of the facility will be exposed to the sedative.
The plan was simple. Enter the chamber, take several blood samples, and get out. Still, elevated pulse readings flashed in the corner of Thea's visor, especially since the doctor was bringing a shock rod into the chamber for good measure. Dr. Tarlow opened the door. They waited a moment. The men remained motionless, still unconscious, still exposed to the sedative. Thea had a suit and helmet between herself and them, a filtration system that would keep her air clean and safe, and yet her knees still seemed to tremble as she walked into the chamber.
We'll start with Toby, the doctor said.
Thea readied a syringe while Dr. Tarlow straightened Toby's arm, exposing a vein. She cleaned the skin there, cotton swab quivering in her grasp. Thea positioned herself over Toby's arm. The vein pulsed lethargically beneath his skin, reminding her that while his body was unmoving, he was still very much alive. Those blood-filled eyes could flash open and find her if the sedative failed to do its job. Thea didn't need a pep talk from Dr. Tarlow this time, only her directions.
Bevel side up.
Thea adjusted the needle.
Keep it at 30 degrees as you enter.
She did as she was told.
Hold steady. First tube.
The doctor passed it to Thea, and she pressed it into place, watching as Toby's blood filled the vial.
Pull.
She removed the tube and was handed a new one. Thea drew more blood as Dr. Tarlow attempted to put the first tube in a rack. Her unsteady fingers found success on the third try. They continued the process in silence, Thea thinking about the doctor's failing hands. The woman was a great asset to Hevitz. This much Thea knew. The microbe Dr. Tarlow specialized in was found only in the Trios's oceans, and so far, those oceans were the only places to produce Carrarium. There were theories that the two were somehow linked, that without the microbe, there'd be no Carrarium, and without Carrarium, there'd be no microbe. And with a microbe that seemed to hinge upon the entire balance of an ecosystem, well, Thea could understand why Hevitz insisted that Dr. Tarlow be involved in so many pre-drilling evaluations. Soon, though, the doctor's hands would fail her. An intern wouldn't be enough. Tarlow would need a full-time assistant to complete her work in a timely manner, maybe even a replacement. When she accepted the next vial from the doctor, Thea caught sight of Cohen across the lab. His eyes were strained slightly, his chin bobbing, as if to say, "Go on, ask her."
"What would your parents think of all this?"
she said before she could lose her nerve.
"I have no idea. They're dead."
"I know. I wasn't trying to be insensitive. I just thought that since they'd been here before, too, this reaction, a waterborne contagion..."
"I'd rather not talk about them."
"Does your family know you're back here again? I didn't get to update anyone before we left, but I'm guessing Hevitz has by now.
I don't have any family, Dr. Tarlow said plainly. My first love has always been my work, and it felt irresponsible to get married or start a family when I'd be away so often.
Isn't that lonely?
I have my work. The lonely person would be my partner.
So you married your work, and that's it?
Thea had meant it as a gross exaggeration of the situation at hand, so she was surprised when the doctor nodded.
I knew what I wanted out of life. I believed in science, in solutions and answers, and I went after them wholeheartedly. I saw no point in romance, and I regret nothing.
Thea could understand some of the sentiment. She'd sacrificed plenty, after all. But a career that forced you into isolation sounded more like a curse than a blessing. Thea loved science, but it had always been a thing to fill the void left by her mother's disappearance. It was a path that might lead her to prestige and tempt her mother out of hiding, a passion that was a means to an end. But for the doctor, science was everything. Literally.
That's the last tube, the woman said. Let's move on to Sullivan.
The thing could feel them, their hooks in its skin, their tools eating its blood. The world had gone dark and muddled. Each limb had become anchored and chained. A blanket of weights seemed to cover its chest. Even the thing's eyelids proved too heavy to move. The feeding devices suddenly retreated. The women moved away. The thing couldn't see this, but it felt it somehow, sensed it in the deepest recesses of its sleeping mind. Free of the hooks, the thing felt lighter, looser. If it could just open its eyes, brush aside the thin, curtained veil that was intent on smothering out the world. Light danced in the distance.
They said no more as they drew samples from Sullivan, using his jugular vein, the only easily accessible one, given that he still wore his environmental suit. In the silence, Thea and Dr. Tarlow finally found a rhythm, smoothly exchanging tubes. When the final one was filled with blood, Thea handed it over with a sigh of relief. A glance at her watch told her she'd been in the isolation chamber barely 10 minutes, but it felt like hours. She couldn't wait to be back in the med bay, a glass door again separating her from the men. She wiped down the needle, coiled up the tubing. That was when Toby's foot moved. Thea went still, certain she'd imagined it. But there it was again, the smallest twitch.
Doctor, she whispered.
The woman looked up from the samples she was threading into the carrying case, her body going rigid as she saw what Thea had. Toby's boot, jerking again, his fingers flinching. Something brushed Thea's knee. Sullivan's hand. She looked to his face just in time to see his eyes fly open. They were filling with blood, hemorrhaging before her, and his hand shot up, seizing Thea at the neck. Even with the added protection of her suit, her visor flashed with warnings. She dropped the needle and clawed at his fingers, positioned just below where her helmet sealed with the suit. She choked on her cries for help, and Sullivan stood as though Thea weighed nothing. She kicked, striking his torso, his groin. The mechanic didn't even flinch. With his free hand, Sullivan reached for her helmet, searching for the release. Thea could hear a struggle behind her, Dr. Tarlow wrestling with Toby. And as her feet swam aimlessly, she realized with sickening dread that she was on her own. No one was coming to her aid. Shadows danced in Thea's peripherals. Her lungs screamed in agony. A childhood memory struck. Thea and Mel at the bottom of a pool, seeing who could hold their breath longest. She'd pushed herself until an animalistic instinct took over and she'd bailed, shoving off the bottom. The last meter to the surface had lasted an eternity, and for a terrifying second, Thea feared she wouldn't make it. Then she was bursting into the artificial light of the pool facility, her lungs singing in relief, gasping down the air. It was a strange thought to have now, as her pulse slowed in her visor and darkness flickered at the corners of her vision. But the feeling was the same. Thea could imagine the taste of air, the relief it would give her if she could just get to the surface, but the surface was too far away. She kicked, going nowhere. Thea caught movement to her right. Mel, the water rippling around him. No, it was Dr. Tarlow, racing nearer, something flashing in her hand. Sullivan released Thea without warning. She hit the floor like a lead weight, gasping and coughing, gulping down the air. The lightheadedness subsided, and she scrambled away from Sullivan, feeling at her suit, the helmet. No breach errors appeared in her visor. It was only then that she was able to make sense of what had happened. Toby was staggering to his feet nearby, Sullivan twitching on the floor. Dr. Tarlow held the shock rod, the end still jumping with energy as she brandished it like a sword. When Sullivan rolled over, Dr. Tarlow hit him again. But Toby was upright now, racing in. "Look out!" Thea yelled, but not quickly enough. Toby barreled into the doctor, tackling her to the ground. The shock rod went skidding across the floor. Thea scrambled for the weapon, her fingers grazing the shaft, deflecting it farther away. She heard the click of a helmet being released behind her, then the screaming. By the time Thea's hand closed over the shock rod, Dr. Tarlow was pressed against the wall, pinned there by the men. Her helmet rocked near their feet. Thea threw the live end of the weapon into Sullivan's back, then Toby's. They dropped to their knees, momentarily stunned.
"Go!"
Dr. Tarlow yelled.
"Leave me!"
The woman's face was red with scratches, thin lines of blood welling up on her cheeks and neck.
"Close the door behind you."
"But..."
"Go!"
she shouted.
"Contain it!"
A hand closed over Thea's ankle. She threw the shock rod down into the meaty flesh of an arm, not bothering to identify which man had grabbed her. She sprinted for the door, over the black and yellow threshold line, slammed her hand into the door switch. The glass slid shut, locking all three adults inside. Sullivan threw the doctor into the wall with brutal force. Her head hit with a sickening crack, and she slumped to the floor, still. The men turned, their dark eyes locked on Thea. She stepped away from the glass as they plowed into it, trying to reach her. None of this should be possible. The chamber had been gassed. The sedative had grown thin. Thea took another step away, feeling sick. With the door open, the gas had leaked into the rest of the facility. She'd only been in the chamber with the doctor for a few minutes, though, and the amount being pumped in, even with the door open, should have been enough to keep the men sedated. But it wasn't. Because these men weren't just men anymore. They were something else. Sullivan and Toby looked at Thea, the door, each other, the door again. Then, as though they'd shared a silent thought, they reached for the seam in unison, fingernails prying at the glass. The door groaned under their efforts.
"Hey!"
Thea turned and found Cohen pounding on his chamber's glass, practically red in the face.
"Open my door!"
he yelled, motioning at the panel for isolation 3.
"We gotta get out of here! Right now!"
Whatever reasons Pitch Evans had for distrusting him didn't seem to matter anymore. Thea triggered the door for isolation 3, and they darted for the exit. Toby and Sullivan were still wrestling with their isolation door, and though Thea didn't think they'd be able to overpower the mechanism before passing out again, she didn't intend to wait and find out. As Thea reached to unlock the medbay doors, the hallway lights flickered on, revealing a face. Hemorrhaged eyes, purple skin blistered with cold. A scream tore from Thea's throat. The black quarry driller stared at them as he bumped into the glass barrier. Then his hands came up and he began to feel along the glass surface that divided them, searching for a way in.
"He can't get in here, right?"
Thea asked Cohen.
"No, but together they might."
"Together?"
Thea followed Cohen's gaze down the hall, where dark silhouettes moved in the flickering light. Silhouettes that were very much human-shaped. She watched in horror as two more Black Quarry crew members joined the first. One wore the remnants of a medic's uniform, now stained with dirt and blood. The second was Commander Ansley Lowe. He stared at them with one blood-filled eye. Where Lee had attacked him, an empty socket stared back. Behind the commander, more crew members shuffled up the hall. They lacked any sort of dexterity or grace, limbs stiff with cold. Commander Lowe bent to inspect where the teeth of the two doors joined to create a seam. His head jerked up, and as though he'd given a verbal order to the others, they began to pry at the doors, just like Toby and Sullivan in Isolation 1. Thea thought of Pitch Evans's final stand, the breached entrance to the bridge. These things were going to force their way into the med bay.
"How long will it take them?"
she asked Cohen. His ray rifle was missing, probably confiscated by Dylan, and all she had was the shock rod and her holstered stun gun. It wouldn't be enough.
"If they're smart enough to switch the doors to manual, a matter of minutes. Otherwise, they're fighting the hydraulics, and who knows. But it won't matter if they decide to use the vents."
"The vents?" Thea spun, searching the room. "That's what you used, right?"
"Yeah, but they started using them eventually, too. That's why I moved to the bunker."
But Thea was barely listening. She'd located a vent in the corner of the med bay, right above a wash station. Setting down the shock rod, she grabbed a bone saw that had been discarded in the sink, then scrambled onto the counter. Using the edge of the blade like a screwdriver, Thea went to work loosening the first of several screws holding the vent's cover in place.
"Almost there," she said.
"Wait. Do you hear that?"
Cohen had gone very still, his head tilted up at the ceiling. Thea couldn't hear anything but the scrape of nails against the medbay's door and the grunting of Toby and Sullivan to her right, still trying to open their chamber. She turned around and continued her work on the vent cover.
"Thea, wait!"
Cohen shouted. That's when she heard it too, the scuffle of something in the ventilation system. Holding her breath, moving ever so slowly, Thea peered through the metal cover. A set of black eyes stared back. The thing lunged, and the cover snapped in half, the side Thea hadn't seen to, still held in place by the screws. Thea tumbled off the counter, landing awkwardly on her left arm. Heat laced through her wrist. A young woman's head emerged from the vent shaft, snarling and snapping like a feral dog. She hissed as her shoulder hit the still-secured section of the vent cover, which blocked her from coming into the room. She lunged against it, and the cover rattled. She lunged again and again, blood dripping into the sink. Thea scrambled away on all fours, bumping into Cohen. He grabbed her beneath her arms, pulled her to her feet. The woman kept throwing herself into the vent cover. She would sever her shoulder just to get through the small opening, and that was if the cover didn't give out beforehand. Thea glanced desperately around the room. Sullivan and Toby were waning in enthusiasm, the sedative again thick on their side of the glass. They'd pass out soon, and Thea and Cohen would be temporarily safe. But the vent cover would give eventually, or the main doors of the med bay would. They were doomed, about to become worse than dead.
Dead!
Thea whirled, staring beyond Cohen and back into his isolation chamber to the far wall, which doubled as a door.
Of course!
The rooms were in place for quarantine procedures, but the ship's manufacturers had prepared for worst-case scenarios, situations that might include a need to hold dead bodies, clearing a chamber's bay for new patients while in transit.
"The exterior door," she said, racing for it.
"What?"
Cohen said.
"We can climb down the hall."
She tapped the controls. A warning flashed, reminding her that the interior door was also open. She pressed on, ignoring it. There was no vacuum to worry about, and she and Cohen were both in their suits. Behind her, she heard the vent cover break free, clattering to the floor. The woman slithered into the room, her shoulder a lump of butchered meat. The exterior airlock hissed as it slid open.
Come on!
Thea shouted. As Cohen darted into the chamber, she drew her stun gun and fired a shot at the horde of infected who were slowly crawling toward them, the woman in the lead. Then Thea backed into the chamber as well, reaching blindly around the doorway, feeling.
What are you waiting for? Cohen shouted. Let's go!
There it was, that familiar rhombus button. Thea pressed it, withdrawing her arm just as the interior door slid shut. The woman collided with it barely a second later, the rest of the bodies thudding into it as well. Thea looked beyond them, across the room. Sullivan and Toby were passed out in isolation one, and Dr. Tarlow still lay slumped on her side, forehead bloody from when her head had struck the wall. The scratches on her neck and cheeks seemed too tiny to be damning, but Thea knew better.
Thea! Cohen urged. Before they figure out how to open it!
She turned, finding him by the soft light of her helmet. He stood at the edge of the chamber, one hand on the frame of the open door, the other reaching for her. She edged nearer, heart plummeting, when she saw what waited. They were 20-something floors up, the severely sloped edges of Celestial Envoy's hull disappearing into the black night. Lisbeth Tarlow felt her grasp on reality slipping. The thump of her pulse was loud in her ears, and it was slowing. The blood on her forehead was sticky and warm. The scratches on her neck seemed to tingle and itch. Neither hurt much, but her entire body felt heavy, leaden. She'd never felt so slow or so lost in her own skin. Lisbeth drew an uneven breath. The pain continued to lessen.
The wound's not deep. You'll be fine.
Thea!
She heard Cohen shout.
Before they figure out how to open it!
Lisbeth couldn't keep her eyes open anymore, but she heard them leaving. The pain was non-existent. Her final thought was not of home, or safety, or escaping this dark planet. It was the bittersweet sting of knowing her hypothesis was right, and that she didn't have more time. He leapt, landing on a narrow service walkway that roped around the ship. It was hopelessly dark. A sunspot must have formed on F1, blocking the bulk of their light. That or the storm had simply kicked up a horrendous amount of dust. Still, he could see well enough. This was not the first bout of blackness he'd been forced to navigate on Achilles, and the lights on his helmet helped tremendously. With one mounted near each temple, a hazy, murky glow radiated around his head like a halo. He squinted. To his right, the hull of the ship. To his left, nothing. Celestial Envoy dropped off like a cliff, the jagged earth waiting below. But straight ahead? If they followed the walkway toward the nose, the hull would extend gradually, allowing them to reach a height they could safely jump from. Alone? He wouldn't waste the time. He'd take his chances scaling the dangerously steep hull right here outside the med bay. The metal was stamped and sealed. There were sure to be hand and footholds. But he couldn't risk Thea taking a deadly plunge. Arriving at Odyssey without the doctor was one thing, but arriving without both women would only make the crew more suspicious of him. And the captain already distrusted him enough. Thea hesitated on the lip of the airlock. There was no time for hesitation. The darkness was coming. As they delayed, it strengthened at the isolation chamber's interior door. The bodies too excited to see the simple open switch, too long infected to use logic over brute force. That had been one of the first things he'd noticed about them when observing. They were smart immediately following infection. Cunning, even. That intelligence waned with time, until they became mindless, ambling corpses. Still, they'd find a way through. That was the second thing he'd learned. The things never quit.
I'm right here, he called out to Thea. Below you. There's a landing.
She lowered herself over the edge, dangling a moment before dropping to the walkway. He put a hand out to steady her, and she gripped his forearm, fingers like thorns.
"I can barely see," she said.
The isolation chamber door groaned. He would have to be her eyes.
"Keep your right hand on the hull."
He took her hand in his, extending them out until their fingertips grazed Celestial Envoy.
"And follow me. Don't think, just run. Understand?"
She nodded. He took off like a bullet, remembering to slow after a few paces. He'd been running like this for months and had grown used to the everlasting darkness, to seeing only so far ahead. He now trusted his balance in a way he didn't know possible before Black Quarry. But to Thea, it was all new. The weak glow of his helmet light was likely all she could see in the world. He couldn't draw it out of her range. It pained him to go so slowly, but he did. When the walkway ended, he stepped onto the long nose of the ship. Thea followed, clumsy and sluggish. The infected were probably through the isolation chamber now. He swore he could hear the frenzy of their half-alive hearts beating in his ears, although maybe that was just the silence of Achilles. The planet was so quiet that the quiet became loud, ear-splitting, thunderous. A roar that echoed across the endless expanse of the planet and the stardust beyond. The hull sloped aggressively. Thea slid up against his back, and he held his arms out, making sure she stayed behind him. His boot tips flirted with the edge of the ship. The frozen earth waited about 2 stories below, pocked with craters and crannies. He could just barely see it. But here? He moved a few steps to the right. If they jumped here, they'd find a level patch of ground. He readied to leap. Thea's hand closed on his wrist.
"It's safe here," he assured her. "Bend when you land. Don't lock your knees."
Her expression was doubtful. The darkness was coming, and it would devour them. Devour her. They could outrun it if they made it to the rover, but only then. He could have said all this. He considered it briefly, motivation by fear. He considered also reassuring her that the ground below wasn't going to swallow her whole or sink its jagged jaws into her limbs. But why would she believe what she couldn't see?
"Just trust me, okay?"
he said, knowing she shouldn't. "About this jump? Yes. But not wholly. Not about so many other things that mattered." Still, she surprised him. She nodded. 7. The Origin. Rover 2 and Odyssey. Achilles, Fringe 1 System. Thea's knees flared with pain, and she buckled forward, barely getting her hands out in time to prevent her helmet from smacking the ground. The land beneath her palms was hard, but mostly level. A narrow trench yawned just meters to her right. To her left was a crater. Beside her, Cohen landed like a cat, graceful, nimble, like he'd jumped from nothing more than a sidewalk curb. He grabbed hold of her wrist, helped her to her feet. Then they were running again, sprinting around the massive nose of the ship, dodging shallow craters and rocky teeth. Thea followed the soft glow of his helmet, not bothering to worry about anything else. Not the terrain underfoot or where her boots landed. Not what waited in her peripheral vision. Cohen was somewhat able to see, his 2 months of isolation on this night-soaked planet turning his vision sharper and keener than hers. In that moment, she trusted him fully. They flew for the gangplank, where Odyssey's Rover 2 still waited. They scrambled inside, and then Cohen had them flying again. Thea swiveled in the passenger seat, looking out the hatchback window. The woman who'd climbed from the medbay vent was mid-jump, leaping from the ship. Her shoulder clipped a rock spire before she was swallowed by the trench. Then the ship slipped from the glow of the rover's taillights, and Thea could see nothing at all.
"I can't fix it," Nova said, staring at the mess of wires beneath Odyssey's flight dash.
She'd feared as much the moment she stepped onto the bridge and saw that the comm gear's compartment door was open. A closer look confirmed it. Half the wires had been cut clean through, their ends now dangling like colorful roots.
"What do you mean you can't fix it?"
Dylan asked. "Look at them." Nova grabbed a fistful of the severed wires and shook them at the captain.
"Someone forced their way into the box and murdered the things. Can we splice them back together?"
"There are more than a dozen colors here, some repeating. I'd have to pull up a manual, and even then, I don't know if it's possible with this much damage."
Nova bent lower and peered into the back of the compartment, searching for the compact black box that stored all the comm records and intercom exchanges.
"Recorder's missing too," she said.
"Someone took it."
"What?" Dylan roared. "We've all been together this whole time."
"Tarlo, maybe?" Nova offered. "She could have come here when we were at the drilling site."
Dylan was pacing now.
"We could do what Thea suggested," Nova said.
The captain glanced up.
"Bail?"
"I could try to fix the comm gear while we fly. If I can patch things up, we contact Hevitz then, from off-planet. Otherwise, we just keep flying."
"All right. I'll go tell Cleaver."
They'd left him standing watch down on the gangplank with the radio.
"You get us ready to fly while I speak with Tarlo. The sooner she and the intern get their asses down here, the sooner we can leave."
Nova shifted off her knees and onto her heels.
"What about Sullivan?"
she asked as she used the dash to pull herself upright.
"I guess I'll see what Tarlo says. Just get us ready, okay?"
Nova nodded, trying to stay optimistic, but the reality of the situation dug in with its claws. There was no way Tarlo had had enough time to assess Sullivan's situation and reverse it. There was no breaking this down into small possibilities. The facts were against her. She'd run out of time. Nova wondered for a moment if her father's motto was a giant scam. Some outcomes were unavoidable, inescapable, impossible. She booted up the engine and initiated the pre-flight diagnostics. A section of the dash lit up red. Nova zoomed in on the blueprint of the ship, her heart sinking as she pinpointed the issue. Something was wrong with the landing gear.
"She's dead," Thea said, the image burned into her eyes.
"Maybe."
Cohen flexed his fingers around the steering wheel, eyes flitting to the rearview mirror before locking in on the treads of Rover One. The tracks from the team's first trip to Celestial Envoy had been cleared away in the storm, and this lone, fresh set were all they had to go by.
"I've seen them keep coming after worse than a rock spire to the shoulder," he went on. "They don't feel pain the way we do."
"Not the woman from the vents," Thea clarified. "Dr. Tarlo."
"Ah."
Cohen's mouth twisted into a grimace before adding,
"She's just infected."
"So they can't die?"
"Oh, they can die. Broken neck, suffocation, blood loss, all the normal stuff. You've seen it on the ship."
She had, but she didn't remember any of those people having hemorrhaged eyes. Perhaps they'd been killed preemptively at the first sign of a nosebleed. For the first time, she wondered how many of those kills had been Cohen's. She glanced at his hands, gripping the steering wheel.
"But who'd want to get close enough to deliver one of those outcomes?"
he continued.
"Makes you wish for a real gun, huh?"
Thea touched the stun gun in her holster, silently cursing Julian Hevitz and his vendetta against traditional firearms. Then again, Pitch Evans had found a pistol that shot bullets, and even that hadn't done him much good. No wonder nearly the entire Black Quarry team had fallen. Thea's thoughts drifted again to Dr. Tarlo. All that knowledge, all those years of research and fieldwork, lost. The fragility of life struck Thea deeply in that moment. Humans spent so much time struggling to understand their world, learning to better exist in it. And for what? None of that knowledge could go with them. Dr. Tarlo had done great things for the Trios, but anything she'd yet to accomplish, any hypotheses she was still mulling over, or contributions she'd yet to make, had died with her.
An alert flashed on Thea's visor, informing her that her oxygen reserves had dipped to 40%. She checked her watch. They'd been on Achilles barely 5 hours, and she was already more than halfway through her oxygen.
"I think you'll find this interesting," Cohen said, pulling a tab from his door pocket.
"What is it?"
"Just watch."
Grateful for a distraction, Thea turned her attention to the tab. A play prompt waited. She tapped the icon. The footage showed a dark room. No, the walls were too rugged for a room, a chasm of some sort, lit by... Thea squinted, trying to make sense of what she was seeing. Metadata in the corner of the footage read, WH Rover 4 cam. Headlights, she realized. The light source was headlights. It must have been a tight squeeze to get the vehicle into such a narrow passage. The footage was focused on an oblong pool of water. If it wasn't for the man collapsed at the edge of it, his boots causing the liquid to ripple and dance, Thea might have overlooked the water altogether. There were two other people with him, a woman and a young girl.
"Lisbeth, get the med kit!" the woman yelled.
She was wearing an environmental suit, but from what Thea could see of her face, she looked strikingly like Dr. Tarlow.
"The med kit! Hurry!"
A young girl raced out of the frame. She, too, was wearing a suit, but her helmet had been removed. She reappeared with a carrying case.
"Is he gonna be okay?"
"Yes, of course,"
the woman said.
"I should have been more careful. I shouldn't have tried to grab it.
If you hadn't fallen in, we wouldn't have made the most monumental discovery of the century. Seaweed, growing here on Achilles. Now, he's only got a bloody nose. Pass me more gauze."
The young Lisbeth Tarlow did as instructed. Her mother saw to her father, having him tilt his head back. He was convulsing slightly, eyes pinched tight.
"I'm cold," Lisbeth said.
"Yes, well, we're lucky for the chasm. It's protecting us from the worst of the storm, and the thermal pool is heating the space some. Put your helmet back on. It'll help."
The father slumped into the earth, shaking more aggressively.
"We need to go back,"
the girl said, helmet dangling from her hand.
"We can't, Beth. Not in this storm. It won't be safe to travel in the open."
"But he needs help. There's something wrong with the water. He's sick because of it."
"If there was something wrong with the water, you'd be sick too," the mother insisted. "Because of your helmet leak and, ouch!"
The woman fell onto her seat, shoved by her husband. Hands now free, the man grabbed at his face, his eyes. Blood seeped through his fingers.
"This is my fault," Lisbeth said, backing away. "If I didn't fall in and crack my helmet, he wouldn't have come after me."
"I would have done exactly what he did," the mother snapped. "There's no fault."
She struggled against her husband, trying to hold his hands down.
"Lisbeth, get in the rover."
"But,
Lisbeth,"
the man grunted out.
"Listen to your mother."
Instead, she stood there, frozen.
"Get in the rover,"
he roared, blood streaming down his cheeks.
"I'm sorry,"
she cried.
"Lisbeth, now," her mother yelled, "and lock the doors."
Finally, the girl ran. She had barely disappeared from the frame when her father lunged forward, his hands closing around the mother's neck. The woman was thrown backward, landing near the edge of the pool, her helmet practically in the water. Her feet flailed beneath her attacker. She shoved at his chest, kicked out. His fingers found the release on the edge of her helmet.
"It's me,"
she choked out as he batted the helmet into the pool.
"Sweetie, it's me."
He kept clawing at her neck.
"Please, it's..."
An explosive bang sliced through the air, and the man staggered away from the woman before collapsing into the water. He floated there a moment, then began to sink, and it was only then that Thea realized he'd been hit not with a shock from a stun gun, but a bullet. Lisbeth reappeared in the frame, her back to the camera. A pistol tumbled from her hand. It looked remarkably like the pistol Thea had seen lying beside Pitch Evans on the bridge. It was theirs. The Tarlows.
Lisbeth ran toward the water.
Mom!
Get away from me, the woman said, pushing her.
Over Lisbeth's shoulder, the woman's face gleamed in the headlights. Her neck bore scratches, tiny rivers of blood.
I'm sorry.
The girl was sobbing, shoulders shaking.
But he was going to... You were...
Where are the others?